Fam, it's no secret America's in a scary place right now, especially for communities of color. And as DEI programs are expelled, Black, queer, and other histories are erased, and law-abiding immigrant citizens and residents are deported, it would be easy for diverse storytellers to give up without anyone questioning why. I can't lie. As a Black woman, I've been feeling this anxiety for a while now. But then I met writing partners Eddie and Miguel, both proud Chicanos and dedicated family men. Not only did they give me hope, but they also educated and inspired me as they opened up about the unspoken costs of assimilation, how they trust and challenge each other to push through imposter syndrome, and while they're committed to telling unapologetic stories that represent their community. Experience Eddie and Miguel sharing their POVs as first and second gen Chicano Americans, fam. I guarantee, after you enjoy our conversation and their work in progress, you'll be fired up to finish your own unapologetic story. You'll know more about the art of TV writing with a partner, and you'll realize that Dochi ain't the only one overcoming anxiety. Hey fam, I'm your host Moniece, and welcome to Works in Progress, Conversations with Storytellers.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having us.
How are you? Good to see you. Come on in.
Thank you.
Chapter 2, Unapologetic, Eddie Ruiz and Miguel Duran.
I'm so glad you guys came. Thank you for coming. Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. So, Eddie.
Here we are.
Miguel. Here we are. Chatting up like buddies.
Huh? Yeah.
Well, I thank you guys for coming on my storytelling podcast. This is something I'm so excited to talk to you too, because you're my first like partners writing book and everything like that. So I can't wait to chop it up with you guys, you know. So I heard him congratulate you about your film.
Yes.
So let's just start there.
Let's get right into it.
So tell us about it.
So I have a feature. It's my second feature film. It's called Adventure Tom. And it is premiering at the Twin Cities Film Festival on Sunday.
Okay.
So less than a week.
Yeah. Oh, so you excited?
I'm very excited. Excited, nervous. It's first time watching a film, watching your film with an audience.
I mean,
I'm dying to do it and terrified at the same time.
Okay.
it's the usual feeling.
So what's the story about? What's it about?
It is a road trip about two unlikely people who end up driving across the country together.
Oh, I love those films. Is it based on something that really happened, or you just...
Not really. So it was actually from an old script that I kind of put on the back burner. I was working on a bigger project, taking it out, and kind of hit a wall with that one.
Yeah.
Dusted this one off, kind of reframed it like from a post-COVID point of view. Like there are a lot of elements that kind of fit well with a little bit of changes. So I did a rewrite, and then it just kind of took off from there. Like we found producers, we got attachments, everything happened very fast.
That is amazing.
Which was crazy as it was happening.
But that meant you just were beating and you did it at the right time.
Yeah.
You bet on yourself. Yeah. That's what most of this job is.
Exactly. Alignment, for sure.
So Eddie, what's going on with you, man?
You know, just right here, working with Miguel, just teaching acting at the moment, love it, and just seeing what's next for me.
Yeah.
And I think this is where it's at, you know. I didn't put like acting on a pause.
Yeah.
But, like during the COVID era, I had a lot of reflection on like the type of work I want to be doing. And even as one of the interesting things that happened with me as I speak to my representation right now in this current state, what's going on with the business is like the first people they stopped writing for.
It's that
type of character.
Yeah.
And so it would, and that didn't hit me until I was out searching for like a project to do on the stage, which I work, you know, I make my living on the stage.
Yeah.
So I just realized like, oh wow, there's actually nothing out there. Mm. And realizing how the business in the film industry impacts even our theater world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a reminder of like why it's so important to tell my own stories. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
My mind is just like, How am I projecting that out there and creating stuff that I want to be seen that's a reflection of me?
So had you thought about writing before that, or this is just...
Nah, I produced a lot.
Okay.
I produced a lot of films. Same thing, never thought of being a producer. Kind of got sucked into it. My producing school was YouTube. You know what I mean? Like, being like, how do I do all this, right? And I'm just being real because I never foresaw myself doing that. I just saw, like, it was so singular as being an actor. No one told me you could do it all.
Yeah.
And it never felt like anyone was giving you that opportunity either, right?
Yeah.
But for me, as soon as that was introduced to me, it was introduced by an individual named Terrence Houston.
Uh-huh.
And we did a film, and when he brought it up to me, we actually drove up. I was shooting a film with him that he directed with Chris Colfer.
Okay.
And we went up, he was just asking me about my life, you know? Terrence grew up in, like, Seattle or Washington, right, in that area. And so he was living in Pasadena at the time, and he's like, I didn't realize living in Pasadena and living in Boyle Heights, how close that was, but yet how different it was. It's when he heard
worlds apart, worlds apart, right? Yeah.
So through that, he then contacted me and said, hey, have you ever thought about producing? And I was like, no, because I don't know how to produce. And he goes, I think you'll be good at it. But then where this kind of came through, the project that we ended up creating was that I was doing a Q&A with the film, and I had a producer come up to me.
Uh-huh.
And I went up with Terrence, and we were talking, and then he said, look, you sound good up there and all that, but what's your story?
Right.
And that's, I was like, well, what do you mean by that? Like, you know what I mean? I didn't understand it. And then I just said, I don't know what you mean. What do you mean? He goes, when are you going to write your story, though? I saw what you did up there.
Right, right.
I can tell that you were just in the background of that.
Yeah.
When are you going to be leading your own story?
Right.
And at the time, I just didn't get it because I was like 26.
Yeah. And right? You were just thinking about acting.
I was just thinking about how do I pay back my school loan? You know, coming back from London and having that debt. That's all I was thinking. Right. And so then I said, I would love to sit and talk with what you mean by that. I want to enjoy this night. I want to talk business because it's my first time experiencing a film festival, right? And it was the Latino Film Festival at the time. So I said, can we do that later? And said, yeah.
Because
I knew nothing of this person.
Yeah.
And also my dad always taught me, don't trust everybody, right?
Yeah. So good advice.
So I said, let's go ahead and have a chat. And we did, and we met. I found out he was a producer from Disney. And he said, I think you got what it takes to write a story. I just don't think you know it.
Mm.
And so... So yeah, and then what happened was I wrote a spoken poetry piece. And from that piece, it led into this idea that I had, the concept. And then what happened was I actually put that on pause because Miguel contacted me.
Okay.
And he contacted me about, hey, I wrote this piece for you.
Now, did you guys know each other before?
We did. We worked.
How far back did you go?
Gosh.
It's over 10 years now.
Over 10 years, yeah. Huh? Easy. Yeah. I'll never forget. I don't even know if Miguel knows this story, but I'll never forget when they offered me the role after I auditioned for him. I'll never forget. He didn't realize this, but I heard off the phone, he accepted the part. Right? And that was so, like, I don't think I ever told you that. But there was something really cool, and I love working with people like that, not as an ego booster, but because... when you just know that you connect to make art.
Mm-hmm.
And that piece was really cool because that challenges all the status quo, the stereotypes in our communities with, in this case, with alcoholism and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a special project. And then Miguel, I want to go do my thing. Miguel's doing his. And then coincidentally, he contacts me and he sends me the script. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. It was just aligned with,
right,
in the place that we're in, you
right
know, with everything. And so the piece itself dealt with the Chicano rights movement.
Yeah.
And he wrote this beautiful monologue that I remember looking at. And I said, yeah, I want to do this. And then we shot it. Yeah. Same thing. It was like during COVID, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So. We did a nice festival run. It was really nice to be nominated as best actor for his project. And then I told him, I said, hey, I have this thing that I think you're right for as a co-writer.
Uh-huh.
And I shared it with him. He responded instantly. He said, I want to do this.
Yeah.
And we just zoomed. We were on the virtual, just meeting once a week.
Oh, that's how you wrote it?
Yeah, that's how we wrote it.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. And had either of you been co-writers before?
No.
No, on like little things, but never anything that like developed into something.
Okay.
Yeah, not at all. And it was so awesome to like you said, we both kind of were doing our own things after we had worked together. And you know, I had no idea when I sent him this, like how much our thoughts on like the types of story we wanted to tell aligned, like after doing that short and then seeing that you were working on this, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like,
so you kind of were both in the same space and just 100%. Didn't know you were there.
Yeah. Well,
explain to me what that space is. Like, what were you both experiencing at that time?
Gosh. Well, for me, going back to what I was mentioning earlier in the business was just none of the stories felt authentic.
Mm.
None of them felt, and I like to speak for myself in the Chicano experience.
So you're both Chicano?
Yes.
Okay.
But Chicano, once again, another connection, right? There's all these things that just aligned. And so for me, I felt lost. I felt lost with who I was because I was taught so much to assimilate, especially in this business.
Yeah.
You know, my full name is Heriberto. I go by Eddie.
Yeah.
The reason why that happened was because casting wasn't calling me in because they couldn't say my name. Or they wouldn't call me back based on just the embarrassment of them not being able to say my name. So I was losing opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just an idea of like what I was going through throughout the business and being like, how much have I assimilated to just be a working actor?
Mm.
And then on top of that, I was always the token Latino in everything that I did. So I never felt like a sense of belonging based on that. So so for me, it was a challenge that I told Miguel, I wanna be unapologetic. And everyone keeps telling us that we can't carry dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one thing that I think where we were in that space, I said, I want to challenge that status quo. And I want to create something that gives us this heavy dialogue-driven show with these complex characters that are being unapologetic and are dealing with real issues that are ageless.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where we went. So, I mean, I don't know.
So you were feeling the same way, Miguel?
Yeah definitely. I think it was a lot in terms of identity and mm-hmm. how I wanted to express that and the way I wanted to tell my stories. Like I've got kind of a relationship with my own identity that I've struggled mm-hmm. with, in the sense that I view myself as a Chicano. My name is Miguel. You can hear the way I say it. I don't speak Spanish, and it's because my grandparents were very much about assimilating and I didn't so I wasn't taught it. But like I feel very, very strongly connected to my culture, but at the same time, I feel like I'm not always accepted because I'm a little like I often feel I'm here, and
you're in between
all here,
yeah.
But I want to say like my experience is still part of that experience, and so I think a strong shift, like around that time, was focusing on telling that view and saying this is a Chicano Latino story. It's my story.
Right.
So it still is.
Right.
Even if it's removed from maybe some of the other ones that have happened before.
Now, what I love about this is that we don't often talk about what the price is for assimilation and what you lose by stripping away your identity just to become what is palatable to the masses. And then the trick bag of it all, though, is by stripping away your identity, you become palatable to them, then you're not palatable to them. You know, it's like, and then now you're stuck with like this, who am I thing? Even as a black female writer, I've had to struggle with that myself. Like, how black can this be?
100%. Well, because you're telling also an American experience.
Yeah.
That's the other difference, right? We're not trying to go back into like my parents' motherland, you know, into where they come from and telling the story of that experience. It's like, no, I mean, I'm first generation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm first generation, born here, right? First generation, first one in my family to graduate from any college. The very first one. First one to be in the business. So like, that the sense of belonging comes from a place of like, we're doing this, but no one, I mean, I'll never forget some of my pops like being like, this is what I'm doing. I feel lost. He goes, well, figure it out because I can't help you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So that was a big realization and a big drive to this individual that there's no playbook for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what it's about. How are we setting up ourselves and the next generations into understanding the experiences that they can have with when people like us are trying to set the gateway, right, to open it up for mm-hmm. them to be able to have the access to all the resources.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of nuance in the piece that we're writing there about, like, how do you figure it out?
Right.
How do you figure it out?
Right.
But also knowing that you're gonna be contested with these deep issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's even in our story with Junior is like, that's the whole thing. Like, when you go and take on the world, it gets heavy and dark real quick because your past comes up real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And not just about you, it's about your entire family.
Mm-hmm.
And so using all those forces against you, it becomes like, are you ready to handle that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, also where I'm at. Like, man, like, how much do I give up? How much do I fight? How much do I make my voice out there because I know my father's background?
Right.
And that could come back and haunt me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so, like, it's the balance of how much you're willing to give up of yourself.
Yeah, and how much, I'm curious about this piece and that, how much of it is Miguel and Eddie? Like, right now, like, we were talking in the green room about, you know, you're both fathers, mm-hmm. you have life going on. Mm-hmm. Like, how much of that has bled into this piece, and has it changed over time because you've changed?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I think the blending of itself lends itself, and I think the way we collaborate.
Okay.
Because I'm the type of person where, like, I have this idea, my mind works very in these visuals in my head.
Right.
So articulating that doesn't always work. That also comes back into, like, never having the vocabulary.
Right.
So when I come and I tell Miguel, I say, let me put it on paper, give it your spin,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll come back and we'll look at it. And then I say, but mess it up. Mm-hmm. And then we'll both come back and clean it up, me in the middle. But that only came because of the short film that we were doing.
Mm.
We're already aligned. I'm like, we're aligned. Mm-hmm. We're almost blending these two projects together to a certain degree, right?
And language in that one was mm-hmm. such an important thing in terms of how the professor spoke to how the student spoke in terms of the words they use, how they speak. And you see that in this one too. And I think, like, going back to what Eddie said earlier, so much of why we connect is I think we both have that background in a sense of I'm second generation, he's first generation, I'm second generation.
Right.
All of my experience is from family who has been here.
Mm-hmm.
So much of my family has already been, I grew up in Arizona, but been here a while. Like a situation where, like, the border just kind of moved over where they've been for a very long time.
Yeah.
So much is coming from somewhere else. But also the first one in my family to go to college and to be doing this. And I think I just really connect with Junior in the sense that there's such a balance of when you do that of understanding, like, a place where you started, but also a privilege that you now have. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's such a balance of not taking for granted that privilege, but also realizing that there's a ceiling to that even when you get there, and it's not, that privilege isn't always going to be respected,
right,
as you
move
to a place that you haven't been before and makes other people uncomfortable that you're suddenly there.
Right. And when you're writing from this space, do you have to write not worried about who's watching? Not worrying about who is experiencing this?
You know, I think when I write, I don't care what people think.
Okay.
However, when I write, but then we come back and we start dissecting how we're representing these individuals. Because to me, what's important is coexistence.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about divide.
Mm-hmm.
And in our characters that we have, when they don't identify as Chicanos, any other race, it's about how we are interconnected through humanity.
Okay.
That's what we're searching for, right?
Right.
While dealing with those issues and not denying them.
Mm.
The world isn't black and white.
Right.
It's about those uncomfortable conversations.
It's messy.
Yeah. And that's what every scene that we always talked about is like, is this uncomfortable enough?
Is it messy enough? Yeah. It's too perfect right now.
Those are the challenges, right? Because I think for us, what's important is that we're not like washing anything away. This is us watching Junior and his siblings deal with them on the spot. Now you got to deal with this challenge. Let's go there. We're not holding back. We're not prolonging that. Once they get that issue, they're dealing with it then and there.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's next, right? And so that's kind of like, I think, where we come from, right? Like when we were dealing with all those challenges. But also, I think we had a lot of conversations.
Mm-hmm.
There was moments where him and I, Miguel probably doesn't know this, but like I'm the type of person where like I'm getting conversation.
Yeah.
That it looks like it has nothing to do with my project.
Right.
But you know.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I'm just gonna see what's up. You know what I mean? And then I'll be like, no. Remember like what you told me?
Mm-hmm.
Let's get that in there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like so, there's a lot of pockets like that because Miguel is a writer, right?
Yeah.
And Miguel loves telling the story from from the lens. Mm. I'm an actor. I'm in front. I know what that feels like. But there's moments where I think with Miguel, because I trust him and because he trusts me, I challenge him. I'm like, nah, bro, like, you're going to say this. I know you haven't said it yet.
Yeah.
So
there's
a way where I really like to pull it out of him where I'll be like, I'm not going to let you not write that scene.
Yeah.
This one's for you.
Yeah.
Go and write it. And there was like three scenes in particular that I know that I said, you're writing that scene.
Right.
I'm not, get it to me, I'll look at it and we'll dissect it, but this is your voice here. You know what I mean? So I think that was really cool because throughout the piece, then the challenge was, how do we get these two voices to become one?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think that just came from the stories we're telling.
Conversations.
Our conversations, but also like these are
shared experiences. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Right. Yeah. Like it's what?
People we know, people we grew up with.
100%. It's just what we stand for.
From all that.
And how do you challenge him?
How do I challenge you?
I mean, I think, in my opinion, the way I was challenged was a lot of the intellect.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning there was times where Miguel had like would tell me like, no, we're not gonna remove that because this information, and going back to what you're saying, how do we feel that the audience is gonna feel?
Yeah.
Right? And in a general sense, he would come back and be like, at this point I don't care what they think for that.
Yeah.
They need to hear that.
Right.
So there was challenges where I think I would be like, oh, I would be too polite.
Mm.
He would come in and be like,
and mess it all up.
Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of those moments where I wanted to rework things and he said, no, we're keeping that.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
So I think it was really, it was on the page. Like
knowing
the story and how all those pieces fit and just having that reminder to Eddie. Because I think sometimes, you know, you'd be focused on like that particular scene and like, I'd be looking at, no, you need to see this.
You're looking at the overall picture.
Yeah.
And he's looking at, so the macro and the micro are working together.
Exactly.
And then how does your, cause you're a writer and a director.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work working with an actor who is a writer, but as a writer director, like what is that process? Are you,
I think it's awesome because the reason I love doing what I do so much is because of the collaboration. So all we're doing is doing it at an earlier stage. We're doing it at the script because the thing I love when we're on set is we're having conversations like before, like there's so much work, like everything's done by the time you're rolling and
right for the most like, part.
We talk through it all. We have a sense of things and that's the same thing we're doing with the script. We're,
mm-hmm.
We're talking through things. He's bringing that perspective. I'm bringing this perspective, and it works. So I just see it as the same thing, just at an earlier level,
an earlier stage
of the of the creation of the story.
Okay.
Well, and I think also understanding things we care about.
Okay.
Checking in on that, like always being like I think through our process, making sure we're checking our boxes into like, what are not only things that we want in this pilot, but also in the entirety of the season? Mm-hmm. Where does that grow? What are the things that we want to challenge ourselves for these characters to deal with, right? That mm-hmm. that are, once again, that are immediate, but also have been impacting our communities for the amount of times that it has. That's really where we're focused in. And I think we're very lucky to own in on the Chicano experience.
Now, what is the Chicano experience?
Well, you know, as a Chicano, for someone that is born here and identifies as Mexican, but their parents were born in Mexico.
Yeah.
That's really where the definition of it is, right? And how, but I think what it is here is really finding the experience of what it is to be a Mexican American for us in this particular thing in Los Angeles.
Very specific.
Yeah. To just the experience, in this case for us it's in East LA.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
But also why I think our story is unique, which is very real. Not only are we dealing with it in East LA, is my parents moved to La Habra Heights.
Mm-hmm.
It was extremely conservative.
Mm.
So like the experience that we're telling is, yeah, East LA, but I think what makes our script unique is that we place them in this very conservative like environment. However, my father never assimilated.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was still his whole self. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like it was one of those things. And I think that's the thing that we learn through even the parents in this. Like the mom kind of is playing the game with the politics, but also that's the thing that another challenge that we have there, or a beautiful thing that we have, I should say, is that this is the mom, we changed the patriarch, where the mom is the one that is running the show. She's the one that her career is now on to the next level, where the dad becomes the more maternal figure.
And that's gotta be hard, especially in the Latino community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I'll speak for myself. Like, I mean, my father couldn't be any more machismo than, you know what I mean? Like he is, like, if there's a definition of machismo, my father's name,
that's his picture right there.
You know what I mean? But through years and through conversations, it's interesting because, yeah, that's what he does on the surface level. But you quickly understand that's his protection.
Mm.
Because when you find him at intimate levels on a one-on-one, that's not what he is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's an emotional wreck trying to figure out life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those are things I think that we explore with our characters. I think a big challenge that we always ask ourselves, how are we challenging the status quo?
That's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
How are we challenging the status quo? What are we used to versus what? How do we want to see the future?
Right.
That's what.
Because you can create it.
100%.
Yeah.
And so for me, what's important when we write, and something that I always share with Miguel is that, and even why I'm always gravitated to his work, is that when I watch something, I want to be educated.
Mm.
I want a spectator or an audience member to watch it. And like the scene that we read,
mm-hmm.
I want someone to know that there are ways to cope with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And just giving someone the information, if they could watch that scene and take that back and be like, oh, just breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what's in front of me. Mm-hmm. And through that, I can like have a just some knowledge to be able to deal with this generational trauma in some form.
Right.
And so while we're telling stories and doing what we love, I also want it to be educational.
Well, that's the teacher in you, Eddie.
It's the teacher, the parent. Yeah,
you're teaching artists, you know, that's the caregiver of the world, basically. Yeah. That's what artists are. And you just gave a great segue into the scene. So tell us about the scene that you submitted for.
Oh, gosh, that scene is my favorite. When that was one that you wrote, by the way.
Was it?
Yeah,
that was blurred. We both wrote it.
Yeah, right. But that scene to me, when I brought it, I remember telling Miguel, being like, "Hey, this one's close to home.
Mm-hmm.
Take an abstract, take at it. I want you to go and do it because this one's too much in my head.
Mm.
How I foresee it.
Mm-hmm.
And also the reason why I wanted that is because even when I write a lot of nuances."
Mm-hmm.
And I think on paper, where the writer comes in, is that Miguel has the structure and the technique to be able to make it readable for someone that we're trying to shop it to, or we're trying to film it.
Mm-hmm.
That we're not trying to read Eddie's head, the information's on the script.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this scene in particular, it's almost like our pilot, from the beginning up until that moment, he's just losing everything. So it's the first time we actually stop. It's the first time that we actually let him breathe.
Right.
And deal with his anxiety and everything he's dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So the lead up to that is him going like just adversary after adversary after adversary and telling himself. But while he thinks he's dealing with this, he's not solving anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because he doesn't have that information yet. So when he finally gets to his brother, we see the potential
mm-hmm.
of him with the right resources and the right care that he could get the help that he needs. Right. So, I mean, how do you feel about that scene? Like,
oh, I love it. Well, I think also it reveals a lot after the whole big family interaction of that relationship, because the relationship between every sibling is different. And yeah. seeing the way his brother, like, you know, this is not the first time, you know, like,
right.
That's the brother he reaches out to. And even in the middle of chaos with kids at an airport,
right,
he's able to do what he needs to do to connect, and it works because right. it's the ability to like know what to do, but also have that connection that when you're having that conversation it also helps Junior do it, because if it's not the right relationship, even if he's saying the right things, it's not necessarily going to help Junior get to that place where he needs to be.
Yeah,
and it's also breaking the connotations of other imagery that we set,
right?
Of meaning, when you look around in East LA, where you hear like East LA is bad, like, you know, all the stigmas, all the stereotypes, all that. What I love about it is that he's naming the paleteros.
Mm-hmm.
He's naming the grandmothers, right? He's naming all these people that surround us that are so beautiful that sometimes we just forget.
Right.
Because we're dealing with these real issues. And that scene, on top of dealing with his anxiety and all that, it's the imagery too that I love of him and us being able to share and uplift these individuals that make our community. And that sometimes we're going through life so fast
that we miss it.
We miss it.
Well, let's look at it.
Yeah.
Let's enjoy it and see.
Interior airport terminal. Stephen is with his family at the airport. His phone rings and he answers it.
I couldn't do it. I don't belong there.
Junior is having an anxiety attack near a breakdown.
Do what?
Stephen hands Randy the boy and explains the situation.
It's Junior. He's having another anxiety attack. Junior, listen to me. Whatever you do, do not hang up the phone, okay?
Exterior, Boyle Heights, pond. Junior is pacing on the grass, panicked and mumbling.
Take a deep breath. Look around. Tell me five things that you see.
A paletero. He's dancing. He's dancing to make some kids laugh. An old viejita feeding the ducks at the pond. A dad and son playing catch.
Junior, you okay? Give me at least two more.
A man rollerblading to the music.
Junior turns and sees a young boy staring in his direction.
A young boy drawing in his sketchbook.
Good. Now, can you tell me, little bro, what's up? What happened?
I just feel like I keep walking into these traps that I can't escape. It's just the self-asphyxiation, and I'm exhausted of feeling this way. I don't know who I am anymore.
Junior's back in reality. He hears Stephen on the phone, growing more worried.
I don't know, Stephen. Maybe Mom and Dad are right.
Listen, it's okay to feel all of this, little bro. I understand. But if I listened to everything Mom and Dad said, I wouldn't be in the position that I'm in today. I'm about to build a dream house for my family on my terms.
He looks over and sees Randy showing the kids a magazine of their dream home. Interior, airport, terminal. From the terminal, Randy calls Stephen.
We're boarding. I'll call and check in when we land, okay? You know I am always here for you.
Yeah.
Go get some rest, drink some water, and read a book. Better yet, go write one. And then when you're done, send it my way.
Junior sits alone as he reflects. Continuing to watch the neighborhood, he glances at the boy drawing and grips his notebook tighter.
Huh. Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting because this piece was a what if. And why I say that is because I remember when I went to grad school to London, a lot happened. And it was a big realization of like how under-resourced, how lack of knowledge I had as an individual, right, without even realizing it. And when everyone left, my girlfriend, my mom, everyone, and I settled, I remember just being in my apartment and just crying for like almost like the entire day. Just like, and I don't know why. I mean, I think I know now why. Yeah. I don't want to give that an answer, but that scene was that.
And that brought all that back for you.
Brought all that back for me. And also even creating that's where, that's what kind of like was the essence of the drive of it. Yeah. And even watching it now, reminding of that state of loneliness.
Yeah.
When you feel just so at loss.
Yeah.
And don't know how to express yourself, that we suppress all these feelings.
Yeah.
And we try to figure it out.
That's amazing. That's really powerful. So I actually experienced panic attacks when I was younger. I was after college, I was supposed to go to grad school for film, and I was in an accident that prevented me from doing it. And for a while after that, I just wanted a normal life.
Yeah.
Like whatever that like 23-year-old me thought that was, and so I got just the random first day job I could get to pay rent. But I still I was still writing. I just was disconnected from the industry, and I felt very lost about where I was while dealing with the trauma of the accident. And so I would get these panic attacks where I felt like I had no idea what I was doing, because I would go to this job. It was a cubicle job. I would finish it up and then like work on my scripts. When I finished all my work, so like work on my scripts. But there were multiple times where at lunch I would like, it would start to hit this, this feeling. And I would go hide in my car until I could calm down enough again.
Do you think your panic attacks, both of you, were from your struggle with the identity and assimilation and all the things that were unsaid?
Yes. I think for me, especially, it was, when you grow up in such a, like, in a Chicano family, like, it's all about family.
Yeah.
So you rarely go beyond those boundaries. It wasn't until I went to undergrad that I went to like a predominantly white school, and realizing I was literally the only Chicano in that school, and never felt a sense of belonging. To then going to London and feeling the same thing, but also feeling like all these experiences were robbed because of your identity. And so, I think that for me was like how all of that accumulation of my identity, not having once again the vocabulary or the way to express it in a healthy way, lent itself to finally having an aha moment when I finally put it on paper, to being like, this felt amazing.
Yeah.
And also, more importantly, I hope other people are seeing that are going through the same thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I think what I love about this scene is being able to share not only, like, bring in that experience of what it feels like to have a panic attack, but to now at this point, be able to share the calming way to have, like, talk someone through it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When they're in it, which I certainly wasn't able to do when I was younger. It's almost like old me talking to young me.
Yeah, yeah.
In this moment,
right?
Which I think was a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah. And I keep hearing you both say community.
Yeah,
That's like super important to you guys.
Yeah,
I think a big theme in our project is about how do you build your community.
Yeah,
and so with community, it's about how are we building that, and how are we helping each other? Because mm-hmm. the piece itself looks a lot like, in order for us to be able to deal and solve a lot of the bigger issues, in this case, the East LA community, what are we doing as a community to help ourselves? Because there's so much divide from our point of view, and at least for me and my upbringing, that in order for us to tackle those issues, we need to be on the same line, alignment. And I think that that's also like a big thing that we talk about in this piece is like, what are we doing within our own community in order to deal with the bigger, broader thing of community? Mm-hmm. And how does all that kind of intersect?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think on a personal level too, from Junior's experience, it's that experience that I think we both shared in the feeling. There's a big imposter syndrome, feeling like you don't belong.
Right, right.
Even if you bring the same qualifications, right, you're experienced someone who has other people who have done it before. Like, being first makes you feel like you don't belong, even if you're just as qualified as the other people that are there. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've struggled with a lot. And it's something that...
Is this something you still struggle with?
Oh, all the time, absolutely. yeah, every time I'm starting a new project, I'm like, are they sure they want me to do this? Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something I've gotten better at, especially in college. Like, same thing as, like, I went to a small liberal arts school that was predominantly white, and I felt extremely, extremely out of place. And it was that same thing. It was, I felt so, and it relates to the short film.
Yeah.
That I wrote and directed and brought Eddie on for. It's still being first makes you feel like you're not as qualified as the other people.
You know, I've never heard anyone say that before, that being first makes you feel like you're not as qualified. Mm. That's interesting, because I was the first in my family to graduate from college. Mm-hmm. And you know, family members had gone, they just couldn't finish because life was life in them. Mm-hmm. But they all made sure that I finished.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They all got behind me like, you know, no. Yeah. You're going to finish. You're going to take these classes. What you need? You need some money on your books? We're going to get some money on your books. They all got behind me like I was carrying the dreams that they didn't get to fulfill.
100%. And I think what it is the unspoken pressure of being perfect.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that's the other thing too, right? Like, there's one thing where, yeah, you could do it, like Miguel said, other people have done it and whatnot. But for our community, it's like, we're all watching you.
Yes, you're representing the community, yeah, right?
Exactly. So now there's no room for error, at least you think there's not. Mm-hmm. The only way I've learned how to deal with life is through the art, which is why I'm so in love with it, because literally I was a troublemaker growing up. You see what I mean?
Didn't know your voice.
Yeah, exactly. But what I realized was like I had so much I wanted to say, but not realize how I could put that in a structured form. Mm-hmm. So once I got that structure of being like, oh, now I gotta go and be responsible and memorize lines and do this, I was like, I'm down for this, you know? And then that feeling of like the cathartic feeling once I ended any scene or a play, of that fulfillment to be able to deal with my trauma in that form, has been like the most rewarding thing for me, that I know that this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
So would you say that art saved you?
100%. I love my parents, I love my family, I love my friends, but I always, whenever I feel a sense of anxiety, a sense of anything,
right,
it's as simple, if I ever feel like a sense, which is very rare, a sense of giving up, I go back and I read a play. And once I read that play, I'm like, I love doing this. Like, I go right back to it being like, I could do this all day. And so having the privilege to write something I mean, I'll tell you the experience with this, even doing this here. When Joy contacted me about, hey, do you know any writers talking, you know, as we're talking about imposter syndrome, I never thought about my script. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so what ended up happening was, I remember contacting Miguel, and he, you know, he was putting everything together, and it was my wife that told me. She goes, I don't understand why you're looking for all this when you got something. And I was like, what I got? You know what I mean? like, you know what I mean? Like, still looking for work right now. Business is slow. And then she's like, and then she goes, your pilot that you wrote with Miguel. And I went through it, and I was like, that's right. Like, what am I doing? But it came from that sense of like, is this worthy enough? Am I, my words worthy enough, right? And that's where that came from. And so, it was, you know, it's this constant convention that we're, dealing with in our head.
It's like music in the back of your head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the question that Junior goes through the whole pilot. Am I worthy enough?
Yeah.
Because everything keeps falling apart as I keep sharing my gift with the world.
Yeah.
So it's like, is this what it's supposed to be like? You know what I mean? Like, do all those people that have, that share their gifts, do they go through all this, but they just happen to have money and that, you know what I'm saying? So like, for Junior, it's like, he's constantly like, that's why that one line that he says, maybe mom and dad are right, is him just being like, stop dreaming.
Well, what I loved about your piece is that it's universal. Mm-hmm. It speaks to any artist that has been the alien in their own families.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming from a Chicano point of view, but everyone has felt, any artist who is like, you know, your family is doing this one thing and this is what you're supposed to do, this is the track you're supposed to go down. Besides, I also want you to be able to feed yourself and eat. And then you want to do something else and there's no roadmap. There was no roadmap for me 100%. Either. So that's why I love that this piece is included. I thank you so much for including it, because I know it's going to speak to people out there, young and old, who've always wanted to be writers and creators, but the anxiety got the best of them.
Yeah, it's a sense of like, how do you keep going when you feel so alone? You know what I mean? Because that's the thing also about writing. Like, you write and you're lonely and you start questioning all these things. Or sometimes a trauma is so hard that you stop because it's actually harming you more than helping you.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think for us, what was beneficial, that when things got hard for me on a personal level with this project, I was able to lean on Miguel.
Right, and vice versa.
Exactly. So, like, I think there was a lot of moments that we were able to share of being like, we didn't even have to tell each other, we just read each other. You know what I mean? And so it felt like there was moments where I would see it in Miguel in the struggle for whatever his internal conflict was, and I would just be like, tomorrow we're gonna reassess and I got something for you. I got you. Or vice versa, like,
yeah.
Hey, let's meet, you know what I mean? That happened a lot.
Like, exactly.
There was a couple of times where I think for him and I, it got rough in regards to like the experience and being like, damn, this is, we've been through this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was moments where we would tell each other, let's take a break for a week, yeah?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we'll come back, right, Miguel?
Oh, they're definitely, like, let's take time to process this. And that's also when I feel like we know we're, like, we're right on where we need to be. We just need to take a step back and then get that, like, last little bit. But it's also, like, I think, like, being specific, like you said, like, it, I mean, hopefully connects with more people by being more specific, which I think is part of like recently what I've tried to do. Like, you always, like, your hope is like connect with as many people as possible in the work that you do. And it, like, you realize the more personal you make it, the more people it actually.
Exactly. Actually, I know. And it's kind of like that's the trick bag that people of color who are artists in this, in Holly Weird, we strip away the thing that makes us. 100%. And then we wonder why it's not resonating, because it's not authentic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a true story. So this piece was beautiful in that you're sharing the, like I said, the insecurities that we all feel, mm-hmm. from a very specific point of view, a very specific story. So yeah. I think it's wonderful. I'm so excited about you guys and this project. I can't wait to see it be where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's been a journey that I'm very proud of and I can't wait. And we're in a great direction with it. We had a great reading with amazing Al Chicano cast and other amazing, beautiful people. So I think for me, it's about landing in the right place.
And the right time.
And this piece is so perfect for what we're dealing with right now as a country, with the way individuals are being labeled and dehumanized. Mm-hmm. And so, We're excited. We have Andy Cruz behind it as well, who's attached to direct it.
Okay.
Works on Euphoria.
Okay.
So it's been like really, it's all kind of like,
it's coming together.
Being put together. Yeah. And so I wanted, obviously Miguel is an amazing director, and I know that hopefully once this all goes, there's all those opportunities to have them. I just didn't want him to direct the first one because of how close we are to it.
Like, I'm excited to be in this position and let it go in that way.
But when you trust the director, mm-hmm. it makes a difference, right?
Yeah,
100%. Yeah.
It's when you build community.
Community. Look at that.
You know what I mean?
Came right back around.
Yeah, that's what it is. And that's what I look for. The people I work with, it's very together. Because mm-hmm. you have to have full support. When we're telling these stories, because these stories are delicate, they're very intentional and purposeful, there's no room to, like, our audience will know if you're not intentional with mm-hmm. any specific information that we're telling. And that's what gets criticized, at least for what I've seen in Chicano stories, is like how authentic it is or it's not.
Yeah.
You know, so I want to make sure that we're like, we don't get any more authentic, especially myself.
Yeah.
Like, I am East LA, I am Chicano, I do come from parents that came from Mexico. Like,
you the real deal.
Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's no questioning anything that we're writing about our experience, you know? We just needed the structure. And I'm very happy that I was able to have Miguel on this journey with me. And I'm very happy that we keep getting these platforms to be able to uplift these stories, because they're so important and needed. I know we focus a lot about the generations coming up, but for me, I'm excited about people like my parents to watch this and take a piece with them, knowing that when their time comes, they shifted that narrative. Mm-hmm. And they were able to, and all their hard work is paid off in this way.
The fruits of their labor.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys. This has been such an amazing conversation. Wow.
Thank you.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Thank y'all so much.
Of course. Thank you. Yeah. This was beautiful and much needed.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have to have these conversations.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you guys came on and talked with me.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
Damn, I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for supporting Works in Progress. See you next time.